Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, the word is out. They're gonna talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe. Is to know from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 630, I Care Bunches. Did I get it wrong?
I mean, sort of?
I don't even know what to do with you.
That's how I like it. So let's go around the virtual table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Before we dig into the movie proper, shameless plugs, don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts. Wherever you find your podcasts, you can find us while you're there. Be sure and subscribe so you never miss an episode. Also, perhaps leave us a review so people that come along behind you know that we're worth listening to. And
you really want to plug the reviews on this episode?
I don't care. I know the alt-right doesn't like this movie. And they can,
the alt-right doesn't like anything.
They can eat a bag. What a joyless bunch of...
Go like, away. Your guy lost.
Who cares? Like, even beyond your guy lost, I mean, you know, everybody's guy loses eventually. Like, it's not even that. It's just like, like, Jesus Christ, you suck the fun out of everything.
And I'll tell you what, go watch The Last Rambo.
Jesus, just go suck yourself. So, anyway, so I don't care what they do in the reviews.
Go watch the new Gina Carano movie.
The only reason that I bring it up, and because I sent this thing to Tom, is that this movie, just to preface it, and I know we're in the middle of plugs, but while it's relevant here, this movie got review bombed because it has a strong female protagonist, and there are lots of things about, like, oh, you're only saying these things because I'm a woman. And so, you know, it's broaching the subject matter, and we'll get into it more, but it's that type of a target for certain people that do not like it when the main character of a movie is
has a vagina.
It was a strong woman, a dominant.
Here's the thing:
that this didn't happen to Atomic Blonde.
I don't
though.
Think they watched the movie.
Yeah,
because
no,
if
they
you
didn't.
Watch
no,
the movie, like first,
off,
I mean, I know we're not into the movie yet, but like she does not come off looking good, and it.
No,
and at the end of the movie, like she kind of get not kind of she gets her comeuppance, if you will, and so it's like to me, it's more about somebody like twisting feminism and weaponizing it in a way they shouldn't, and then getting what she deserves. It's not what they think it is, and I can't put my finger on the fact of if it's that they didn't watch the movie or if they're just that fucking stupid.
It's both.
Like, and I just, but whatever. Like, you know,
it's weird because like the Atomic Blonde didn't get review bombed.
I mean, she's basically a John Wick in that movie.
Yeah, but action. I feel like action movies is a different thing though,
because that's true. Because that's sexy for them, right? Like, this is not sexy for them,
right?
Until they come face to face with a woman that could snap their legs in half.
But it's different, though. Yeah, Atomic Blonde, those in badass female action movies, whether it's going to be a Resident Evil or a Monster Hunter or any mindless fun like that, it's just like, oh, wow, you know, badass woman.
What about the girl with the dragon tattoo?
Well, no, that's a different type of movie. But we're talking about action movies is just different because they're not trying to say these things. This movie is specifically, they think, saying certain things. And while it does, you know, say, like, literally say things, the movie also is trying to make a larger point that they're not listening to or even trying to watch what it means. They just say, oh, I know from the trailer that this woman says, you think I'm weak because I'm a woman and I will, you know, destroy you because of that. And then they're like, oh, well, that's not our movie. They're saying
Boo!
Men are terrible. Yeah, it's stupid.
It's really stupid.
Yeah, I agree. It's very stupid.
Well, let's finish the shameless plugs and then we'll dig in. where was I at? Facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, and you can also join the League of Show Sharers just by sharing an episode, which is the easiest thing you can do to help the show. Just hit that share button so your friends and or loved ones maybe check us out too. So people who were kind enough to share the show this week, Travis Tewitt, who we should take a pause here. Last week we congratulated Julianne Jordan on her engagement. This week, we congratulate Travis Tewitt. He and his wife had a baby. I guess more specifically,
hey,
his wife had a baby. But presumably, he played a role, judging by his level of excitement. So and the fact that he didn't change his Facebook status. So congratulations to both of them on having.
Now,
a baby.
Do we know, is the baby in radio?
No, none of them are in radio. We now know. So
oh, okay. I mean, yeah, I don't know.
So the child is following in his
father's
footsteps.
And babies are so lazy. Like, this thing doesn't even have a job.
Totally lazy. Like, just lay there and do nothing. Scream and cry.
Yeah, it's, you know.
Get a job.
Well, real quick though, I want to say equally exciting. Timmy Tuzum sold his house. Congratulations.
Oh, yeah, he bought. Yeah, I did see that. He bought a new one. I was like, I wonder if he's got. I think he's got a whole room dedicated to both Zunes.
Yeah. Well, then, yeah, the new house, he needed a Zune room, and the old one just didn't, you know, facilitate that. They have kids and stuff, so now congratulations on your Zune layer.
You've got to have that man cave for your two Zunes.
So, anyway, here's everybody else who, as far as we know,
didn't have
nothing worth celebrating.
Didn't get engaged.
So here's the rest of the losers. Yeah. Pat, Andy, Aaron Marlowe, Chris Sanders, Chris Williams, Chris Valls. It landed that way like like a slot machine. Librarian Cynthia, the aforementioned Julianne Jordan, Brent Smith, Gabriel Lugo, Chris Magic Man, Tammy Sherman Powers, Mike, and Oscar. It's a Fandom Thing podcast, The Movie Journey, and then MX Dornan, which is a Jamie Dornan fan account. So thank you very much.
Oh, nice. That's hilarious.
Invasion of the Remake, Carmen DJ, Matt Neglia, We Have a Hulk, which is a great way for last week's guest to skirt the Brad Hine
rule. A loophole.
So, oh, my God. We finally found one.
So hat tip to you, madame. So well done. And I fully support anything that I think will just push Brad Hine a little bit closer to the brink of madness. That's always fun for me. So she needs to be a guest again, if for no other reason than that. So, continuing along, Ronnie Castle, Colby Mack, Ryan Terry from the Forza Crowd podcast, In Session.
Who apparently called me out for wearing tank tops.
Are you not?
What?
During podcasts. Well,
why would that matter? Nobody sees us.
Well, he did when he was on the show.
Full evening gown. Like, nobody knows.
Both him and Jason from the Binge Movies podcast, I guess I was wearing, like, a cutoff T-shirt. And they
a cutoff
me,
T-shirt?
Well, I mean, like, the sleeves were gone.
A crop top you were
no,
wearing?
No, just the sleeves. Just the sleeves were gone.
Oh, I don't think that's called a cutoff T-shirt. But see, Joe, he doesn't buy them. He rips the arms off of his regular T-shirts to make them.
Yeah.
Like, and then he cuts
T-shirts?
Them.
I'm just glad we got to stop wearing the cutoff shorts.
Well, we can't see it. I mean,
yeah, you can't see anything. You think I'm wearing pants now? But yeah, I was just like, both of them were just like, oh, he doesn't wear real shirts when he's doing podcasts. I'm like, I gotta
one day I will be finished
and
with
I put
this
one
list
on,
I swear.
I know. Well, sorry, I put one on today because I felt conscious.
Here we go. So close. So close to the end of this list. In Session Film, Geek to Me Radio, Cinema Recall, and Feel and Film. There, we did it. So We made Ta-da. It to the end.
I think we have all this bottled up energy because we don't do a news and box office episode, so we don't have anywhere to just talk. We are like timed, start a stopwatch, 1 hour review a movie, and we don't have anywhere to just let this stuff out. So we're just trying to find anywhere
some sort of, what's that called? The venting.
Respite. Like we're trapped in a house all day for a year. We don't have anyone to talk to.
Now Joe and I have to leave the house all the time. Our jobs make us.
That's true. Yeah, we have to go to work.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying in
general. Get to hang out in your house all the time.
So, anyway, okay, let's talk about this movie finally. You know, I was listening to the Savage Love podcast with Dan Savage, sex advice columnist, the creator of the It Gets Better movement.
He's very good.
Oh,
he's
great.
Very funny. Very witty.
And he made a great point about this movie, which is it shows you the importance when people complain about representation in film, right? It shows you the importance of representation of the film, and because your main character is lesbian and she's a bad guy, right? And if you guys probably are too young to remember this, but when Basic Instinct came out, so many protests from the LGBTQ community. Wasn't called that then, but she was a lesbian, and they were like, "You made the bad
spoilers."
Wait, she's not a lesbian,
isn't she?
Yeah, she's bisexual,
okay, but. They made her, okay, back in like the 90s, being bisexual was lesbian.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah, they're saying.
We didn't have that.
That's fair.
We didn't have that degree of nuance, right? And
That's true.
And so, you know, that community was really upset because they're like, we're never in films. And then when you do put us in a film, you've got us driving ice picks through people, right? And so here's a movie where now the alt-right's mad about it, but the LGBT community is fine with it. Why? Because there are so many other versions of lesbians and gay men out there that this doesn't feel like a commentary on lesbians in quite the same way. Like I remember when Good Place came out, like there was some pushback about Good Place which is an amazing show, but the character of Jason is Filipino. And he's really dumb, right? And there's not a lot of Filipinos on TV. And so the Filipino community was like, oh, we finally get a Filipino like star on a TV show and you make him really stupid.
Did they walk that back at all? Like, did they make him less dumb?
I don't really think so.
He always
had flashes of brilliance.
Like that savantness?
Every once in a while. But for the most part, no. Okay. I mean, But that's the problem, right? Like, because there are so few Filipinos on TV that when you finally get one, then that seems to be your statement about what you think about Filipinos, right? And so...
Sure.
So I just find it fascinating that, like, you know, there's been no complaints, really, about the fact that she's this awful human being and a lesbian because there are so many other versions of lesbians on TV and film that it's not a statement.
Well, also, what is interesting is they don't make a deal out of it. Like, as you're going through the movie, you're learning more and more about her character, and it's just one of those things, right? Like, she goes to lunch with Frankie, and they kind of have, like, you can tell, like, maybe there's something there. It's almost like that scene in Wonder Woman with Kristen Wiig and Gal Gadot. Where they're at lunch together, and you're like, maybe. Like, this kind of seems
there's
a little,
like one scene like where you see them kind of celebrating with having a sex moment, but it's not graphic. And I think it's really more just there to confirm that, like, hey, we're not leaving this up to debate. Like, they're definitely a couple. They're not roommates. They're definitely a couple.
But they hint at it all the way back in the beginning of the movie, though. It's when they're driving in the car and she looks at her and she's like, you know, whatever, keep your eyes on the road or whatever. But she's like, they don't say it, but the way she's looking at her and then she's like, says a little something, you know, it's hinted at there. And so they hint at it throughout. But you're right, Joe. And I think that's what's great is that it's becoming.
Sorry, can you say that again?
No, once and done. So it's becoming so standard, and because there is more representation, you know, for such a long time, people said, oh, you're forcing representation, you're forcing it, which was putting more out there. And now it's become such a normal thing that they can just throw a character in there that either they're
gay or... We saw it in last week's movie, and we didn't even talk about it. Do you even remember it?
remind
Barb
me.
And Star?
What is it? What's that?
So when, and I forget which is which, who's the one that's not Kristen Wiig?
That's Barb.
Barb. Okay.
When Barb is trying to get into Jamie Dornan's hotel room and the lady starts asking her where she got the shell.
Oh,
it's
sure,
a lesbian
sure,
couple.
Sure.
They're standing there holding hands.
Yeah.
And,
oh, sure.
And, but it doesn't, you know, it's not even worth mentioning. It just happens to be.
Oh, yeah, exactly. No, and that's what's great, though, is because there is more representation now. And I mean, we're playing right into the people that will give us a zero star review.
Whatever.
I mean, but that's it really is great because they put more and more out there and it becomes normal. And then you don't have to even mention it. It's not something because it used to be like, oh, look at that, more representation. Like it was a newsworthy thing. And now it's like, no, there's just roles.
Just an actor.
Actors, characters that
Here's the best thing about those zero star reviews, though. Is that if it just keeps other people like them away from the show, that's a win-win, man. Go for it.
Yeah. I totally agree.
But
you're totally right.
With this movie, though, I think we'd be remiss in, you know, because it's not like the plot's that heavy where we really have to talk every second of the movie. But the situation that happened was I Care A Lot got positive reviews from the critics, Rotten Tomatoes, Certified Fresh, 80%, 166 reviews. Well, the audience ratings, which at the time of its release were only 250 audience ratings. Now it's 1,000 plus, so just over 1,000 somewhere. But it's sitting at 36%. And so there's quite a discrepancy between 80% and 36%. And this is the same kind of score discrepancy you saw on Captain Marvel. You've seen on a lot of things that are either considered feminist movies or anti-man. I'm putting quotes around all these words because they don't really understand some of the terminology.
The Ghostbusters reboot.
But yeah, and so.
Oh, yeah, sure.
There are. Now, see, it's one of these logic puzzles where. If there's a discrepancy between critics and audiences, that doesn't automatically mean it's alt-right.
Well,
right?
See, so I think it's flipped, though, right?
No, hold on. Let me finish making this point because you might not be getting it. Just because there's a discrepancy between critics and audiences doesn't mean that's an alt-right attack. There are lots of movies that critically bad. Think of a stupid movie. I'm
Transformers.
I'm going to throw this out there. Or, Michael Bay movie or a dumb comedy like a Your Highness or something. You know what I mean? I'm just throwing out like a movie that critically may be a very stupid, poorly written movie, but people think it's very funny. So just because there's a discrepancy does not mean it's an attack. However, when there is an attack... there is a chance it could be a discrepancy like this. Like, you know what I mean? So flip it the other way. This movie certainly is. And the reason why I know that is because I went into the audience score I looked through the users.
You're a brave soul.
almost every single negative review of this movie is a half a star, right? So like, if you just didn't like the movie but thought Rosamund Pike's a really good actor, I like Peter Dinklage, really good cinematography, the score, which is excellent in the movie, but I don't like the writing and some of the stuff is contrived, whatever, okay, 2.5 stars, right? Like, you can be critical about it and say, I don't like this and that, give it a mediocre rating. No. The negative reviews on this movie are half a star, and they're all from people that are new accounts, no avatar picture. It's their only review. And like
Does it affect it if you can you do you have to give it a star rating or can you rate it at 0 stars?
No, you have to give it a star rating.
So you have to give it something.
So half a star is the lowest.
Yeah,
right. Okay.
So the reason why it's so low in general, the 36%, is because you have a lot of these 5-star, 4-star, 3.5, you know, you just real reviews from real people, and then you have half stars, and it's bringing the average down to the, you know, 30%, down to the lower end. And the things that they're saying are like, you know, this movie's terrible. I mean, I guess I could just read some. Their review is waste of time, no satisfaction at the end, half a star. Another Netflix high profile failure that at the end, all you care about is the time you wasted, half a star. And then some of these reviews that are, again, new users, you can tell they have never left review or anything. One of them had a half a star rating with like just a stupid review. I don't have this one pulled up. And then right above it was The Dark Knight, 5 stars. You know, and it's like, come on, it's so telling what they're trying to do here.
And
it's just crap like that. So anyway, the point is, there's some people online that when all this was going on, they were like, oh, I'm sick of this fake outrage. Like, just because there's the discrepancy in critics and audiences doesn't mean it's a feminist attack or whatever. But it's like, yeah, but this case, it is.
I mean, when you start to see a trend, like, you know, like you said, with Captain Marvel, with... I think didn't the second Star Wars get a little bit of that because Rey was so far along in like her
powers?
But
the second Star Wars was because it was all about subverting expectations. That was a different thing. That was like, hey, you didn't like this one because it was just like the others. Well, I'll give you something different. Like,
do you notice though that I feel like what you're talking about, what the discrepancy is, like that it's flipped. So like Your Highness gets a really low critical score, but the audience score
is
thinking
the same thing. It more often than not always, but more often than not, it's when there's an organic discrepancy. It's more right. Like the critics are like, this movie's horrible. And the general public is like, this movie's amazing.
Suicide Squad?
Not really. Just because, I mean, sure, maybe the more general like audience stuff, like action movies, yes. But art house movies, yeah, but, slow burn art house
movies.
Yeah,
but I think that
usually is the other way.
I tend to say no because the art house movies aren't going to get enough people to really manufacture that high of an audience score. And people tend to self select out of the process of an art house movie if they don't tend to like art house movies.
Well, and I'm not talking about manufactured. I mean, these are the real ones. The discrepancy that's real is usually like art house movies.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Yes, the art house, you don't see as much of a discrepancy with critics liking it and the public not liking it in art house movies, because people that don't like art house movies tend to self-select out and not go to an art house movie because they know, one, they don't have as many opportunities to see it, and two, they already know that they don't like that hippy dippy bullshit, and so they just don't go. And
well, I think it changed when MoviePass came out. So
sure,
when
that probably made a little bit of a difference.
Because you started seeing people just going to the movies right. because it was free with their membership. Yeah. And so you would see a lot of people like Mother, for instance, which we all are on record about Mother on this podcast. You can go listen to the episode. But that got high critic ratings and really terrible audience scores.
Absolutely. When I was trying to think of an art house movie that was like that did that, that was honestly like the only one that came to mind for me. And but that's also like a deliberately divisive and polarizing film. Like it's looking to achieve that. Like that's
But either way,
like a badge of honor, they wanted people to walk out of that movie saying it was the worst thing ever. Like that's, or they wanted certain people to walk out of that movie, which is also one of the things I didn't like about it. Like I felt like it was daring you to hate it, and then if you did hate it, it was had this smug air of like, well, you just didn't get it. Like that's part of what I didn't like about that movie, more than just that I didn't like it.
Yeah, but in any
or
event,
eating babies. Yeah. I mean, I love the eating baby part. Like that's all
we
I
have
talk
a picture
about.
Of it.
But so it's like those real situations and discrepancies exist. But there's also this like some people are quick to negate the backlash. And be like, no, some people just don't like a movie and don't try to turn it into, oh, well, you're sexist or whatever. It's like, okay, that's fine. I get that you should, you know, have proof that there's a back, you know, but this does have the proof. It's read these reviews, look at the fake accounts that were created.
Right.
For a while, Rotten Tomatoes was doing like a verified review. Like, yeah, but you can't do that now that
I was looking at this and I go, why is this happening? Because I
thought we fixed this.
Yeah, exactly. But so for movie theater, for theatrical releases, you have to prove that you bought the tickets online or send in a picture of your ticket stub. But for Netflix and Hulu and
there's
Prime
no way,
and all that, I mean, you can just leave whatever you want.
Here's the deal.
So.
Like, is not liking this movie a legitimate reaction? Absolutely.
Exactly.
Like, I enjoyed this movie, but I can absolutely see why this would not be an enjoyable viewing experience for some people. Like,
yes.
It's not an easy watch. It can be a very frustrating film to watch just from its narrative.
Yes.
Like, you just, like, it's an anxiety-inducing movie, and some people just don't enjoy that. But to say that this is a half-star movie is ridiculous.
That's the problem. And these accounts are created specifically to review this movie, and these are the type of reviews that they're leaving. I just found one. I'm just going to paraphrase. They said, half a star, this is the worst movie I've ever seen.
Like, no, it's not.
Unless it's the only movie you've ever seen.
Exactly. And so, you know, half star, do not waste your time. I'll only read half stars from new accounts. But, you know, do not waste your time, half a star. You know, it's like, okay, I get it if you don't like the
movie.
It
also feels calculated because so many of the ones you're reading say the exact same thing. They don't waste your time.
Don't waste your time. It's not
like somebody's orchestrating that, or that it's a bot that's just, you know.
Well, here's one that I think is really telling, too. And I posted this one on Twitter the other day. This is a half star, a couple of untrained girls. Ugh, gross, first of all. A couple of untrained girls beat the Russian mafia. Lousy movie. Half star. And I'm just going to jump to conclusions here. I think that they double told on themselves here. The username they created was Juan D. I think they tried to be racist and sexist in the same review. I'm not saying their name isn't Juan, but what I'm saying is that when they created their fake account, I think they tried to be tricky.
Double
there.
Try to double down
on
that.
And so it's like, come on, give me a break. This goes into what I've said many times is that you're watching movies, and I get that you want them to play by the rules the film has created, but also these are movies. We love movies that are unrealistic. I mean, we love superheroes.
Is John McClane really going to beat this international cartel?
No, he's going to die in the first 15 minutes.
That's the exact thing I posted on Twitter. I quoted Juan D. in quotes review, and I say, oh, a shoeless boy defeated a building through full of terrorists? Lousy movie. That was my example. Because you're being so ridiculous when you say if you're really trying to make a valid criticism and say that these two women, because they're not mobsters, could defeat mobsters. Yeah. We have a whole history of films where the everyman defeats the big bad.
It's called the hero's journey. We've been telling this story since literally the beginning of storytelling.
So it's so stupid.
There's a whole series of movies where a serial killer keeps coming back from the dead to kill more people.
Lousy movie. Yeah.
Lousy movie. I love every second of
people. Okay, the first one's untrained not lousy. The farm boy beats a Jedi master. Right? Like, I mean,
but then they would say, well, he did have the Force, he just didn't unlock it. You know what I mean? Like, they'll try to make
is untrained in the Force, beating someone who's hyper trained in the Force, right?
Exactly.
So and enough talking about them. Let's talk about the movie.
I will say, like, Rosamund Pike has kind of found, I guess not really, it's only been two movies, but she has nailed this tone of a character between Amy Dunn and this character that's just like the stone cold, brilliant woman who has, like, just when you think you've got her and, like, boxed her into a corner, she's got a way out.
This character Marla is her expounding upon Amy Dunn from Gone Girl. She's taking that character, making it the main character, and she's ruthless, she's smart, she's calculating, and in this
she's
movie,
kind of not a good
not
person.
Kind of. She's
Amy
Dunn.
Oh, she's a horrible person.
Yeah,
horrible.
Right. Oh, well, it's tough because there is
No,
she's horrible.
No, well, okay.
She's horrible.
You're right. No, that she is. But there are moments where she does show, like, some heart, like when her girlfriend is in trouble or is hurt. There are moments where she is showing moments of vulnerability, but that's it.
Well, yeah, I mean, mobsters and gangsters have families, and I'm sure they kiss their kids before they go to bed, and then they go murder someone. They're
his character's the same way, right? Like, he's
totally
horrible,
but
he wants to save his mother.
So that really doesn't show. I mean, everyone's the hero of their own story, and I'm sure they can rationalize it and compartmentalize things as much as they want. But at the end of the day, her actions show she is a terrible person.
I think the difference between her and the Russian guy is that he's willing to kill innocent people, and she's not. She'll hurt innocent people. She'll destroy them financially, but she won't kill them.
But I also think the parallels are there. I think what they're showing us, and this film is very smart. It's written by Jay Blakeson is the writer and director of the film. He doesn't have a huge filmography. He did that movie, The Fifth Wave, that had Chloe Grace Moretz.
Oh, yeah,
Moretz
the one you told me didn't exist.
The last of the teenage dystopian future movies.
I hadn't seen it, so I didn't know that was what it was. And he did The Disappearance of Alice Creed was his other directorial feature. So the guy hasn't done a ton of stuff, but I think this script is really smart. I think it has a lot to say. I don't think the whole thing has the best writing ever. There are some lines in there that are kind of like, but overall, the idea of it and what they're showing with the film, the parallels between this woman who is a businesswoman and the Russian mobster, the line is blurred between them. Like, it's a really thin line between the two, because while they're two separate things and you can see what she's doing is legal, quote unquote, because she's going through the court system and she's doing this all legally, doesn't mean that it should be legal. Well, and she's also destroying lives and hurting people.
But here's the thing, though, because I struggle with this when I was describing the movie on the radio, which is that, like, you want to describe what she's doing is legal, but it's ultimately not legal because she is targeting people. She is manufacturing evidence to present to the court to make it look as if these people are worse off mentally than they actually are. So she's presenting a false case to the court, and so she's doing it with the approval of the legal system. But if anyone could expose what she's doing is absolutely not legal.
She's bribing doctors.
Yeah.
I mean, she, at the end of the day,
and lying about the condition of these people.
She's a criminal, yeah. No doubt. And when I wrote my review, I said she's a con artist disguised as a caretaker. Yeah. She's not a good person.
Well, I gotta tell you, that's what a lot of civil lawyers are.
Yeah, this movie is very frustrating to watch because it's like, it's one of those things where, like, you know, she'll get her hooks into somebody, and that person mm-hmm. is trying to show that that's not true, and then they get upset, and when they get upset, that becomes proof to the mm-hmm. system that
right.
there's something wrong with
right.
them, because
they play right
yeah,
into her hands.
Because human nature is to stand there and yell and be like, hey, there is not anything wrong with mm-hmm. me. And then they're like, look how bad this guy is. Like,
they foreshadow it in the beginning. Yeah. So the guy that wants to see his mom and then gets all mad and everything, that's foreshadowing.
That guy's great. Have you ever seen Blue Ruin?
Mm-mm. No, I haven't.
That guy's in Blue Ruin, and it's fantastic. He's also in The Hunt. But that's
neither here nor
there.
That against
okay. Macon, his name is Macon Blair.
Yeah, there was a little independent flick, and he's kind of like a mountain man.
Okay.
I don't want to give too much away because it's kind of that gives the whole. But Blue Ruin, if you haven't seen it, is totally worth your time.
But so we see that later with the Diane Wiest character that is, you know, the main person she's caring for, quote unquote. She does something where she basically gets so, you know, worked up and angry at her situation, and then the judge sees it and is like, holy crap, you were right, Mara.
Right,
like
right.
That is how smart and calculating yeah. Rosamund Pike's character is.
Just like Amy Dunn, right? Mm-hmm. Like Amy Dunn had all of that planned out, and the whole thing was, you know, Nick was, you know, it's different in that movie because Nick, while he was cheating on her, like, wasn't that bad of a guy, right? Like, there's just a different.
Not enough for people to think he killed his wife.
Right. Like, there's.
I mean, well, you get to that, but, like, we as the audience viewer are on Nick's side, right? We're like, you know, you're kind of rooting for Nick, but you don't. But in this one, that was my only problem with this, is I, as much as I did enjoy this movie, I wasn't sure who I was supposed to be rooting for.
I think none of
them.
And then
them.
About 20 minutes in, I was
none
like, oh,
right.
neither of them.
And I had this same issue. Like, I was like, I yes. wanted to root for somebody, you know? And I think the people that have a legitimate negative reaction to this movie, that's what's driving it, which is fair, which is that there's no one to root for. Because for a while, I'm rooting for the Russian mob guy. And then mm-hmm. and then when they start when they start racking up collateral damage, I'm like, well, that's not cool. Like,
I realize you can't root for him when the dude walks into the office with pictures of people he was sex trafficking. And I was like, well,
no, he's trafficking drugs. They're mules.
But
no.
Yes. Okay.
They're not sex trafficking.
Okay.
He's still trafficking women.
Well,
it doesn't matter.
He's using them to traffic drugs. Like, they're.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's still moving innocent people across whatever. At that point, you're just like, nope, I can't root for that guy.
Yeah.
Either.
I'm not saying it's good. I was just correcting the.
Oh, I
what
see.
It, yeah. But I think to build upon Tom's point, there are a lot of people that just want a basic movie. It sounds like I'm talking down to people that didn't like this movie. That's not what I'm trying to do. But. There are certain people that just want to watch a movie with a clear-cut good guy and a bad guy. And there's nothing wrong with that if you enjoy, you know, action movies and all that. I'm not trying to talk down to you at all. But I think what a lot of people find problems with were these movies where there isn't a clear-cut good guy or bad guy. That you get a little confused. And also, I think these people leaving negative reviews and aren't watching the movie, they're going, oh, she's the main character, and so you're telling us that a person that does all this to people is a good person and we're supposed to root for them? That's the mistake. You're not supposed to root for her.
But I agree with you. The problem that you run into, though, is you root for Scarface. You're rooting for Michael Corleone. You're rooting for Ray Liotta.
Because they're not hurting real people. That's the difference.
What?
They're not hurting.
Like the Godfather, everybody that is affected,
like,
by the Godfather, they opt into that world, right? Like, that's the that's the narrative trick that film makes. I know that's not the way the mafia really works.
Yes.
But the way the movie tells the story, everyone has opted in. Even if you're Enzo the Baker, like, you came to them and you asked for a favor.
I see what you're saying.
And because, like,
yeah, that.
that horse didn't do anything to
Don
anybody.
Don Corleone even says in that opening scene, like, you know, you thought the police were going to help you. You didn't need people like me anymore. And now you come to me begging for help. And, you know, and so because he.
So that's that a lot of movies where you root for the quote unquote bad guy or a bad guy. You know, it's like when they're OK, John Wick, right? John Wick murders a lot of people. Who are the people he's murdering? Other mafia.
People who have opted into this world.
Yeah, so
I
so
think
that's
you
the
see
difference.
Stories like this lately more in television, right? Like, so it's it's more, you know, Breaking Bad, The Sopranos,
Ray Donovan,
where it's like, you know, the same people that are watching this and complaining that there's no one to root for are going to love, like, they love The Sopranos. You shouldn't be rooting for Tony
Sons
Soprano.
Of Anarchy.
He's an awful human being. He is occasionally charismatic, and sometimes he does something nice, but it's completely at random, practically, when he's going to choose to be nice and when he's... Sometimes you think he should be nice, and he's a... Right? And does something horrible.
Right,
so,
right.
But I do think most people come into a movie kind of expecting there to be good guys, bad guys, and then and it's going to be wrapped up in that, you know, kind of a thing. And so it took me a while too to be like, oh, okay, none of them are good. Got it, you know. And the irony is here's the ultimate irony: if people that are, you know, conservatives that don't like this movie. If you watch it to the end, one, you get to come up, and two, I feel like the guy that we see at the beginning of the movie who loops back around at the end, I kind of feel like he's supposed to be a MAGA type of guy. Like,
oh, I think you're absolutely
like, I mean,
right.
They put him in a hat.
And he's the hero.
And, I mean, yeah. And
kind of.
So, yeah. I mean, like,
he stops someone that's ruining people's lives around now in a worldwide empire or whatever. So, like, I mean...
Yeah, even the hat he's in, it's not a red hat, but like a good chunk of it's red. And like at first I thought that's what
it's the trucker hat. It's not like the hat that I'm wearing. It's like that trucker.
Right.
Mesh
and so
hat.
At first I thought that was what that was supposed to be. And I was like, oh, OK, what's this about? And they back off of it a little bit. But I really think that's what he's supposed to be.
But I also don't think the film is making a statement on MAGA.
I don't think so
in
either.
Those moments. Like even if that character is supposed to be kind of like the downtrodden, hardworking everyman, whatever, like that wasn't a commentary on MAGA.
I concur,
but I think you could read into that. But yeah, at the end of the day, what's so brilliant about this movie is really they present these characters and none of them are likable. But at certain times, you know, you've got your protagonist, the anti-hero, the Marla Grayson character. And then there's times where you want the Russian mob to win. That's how despicable and
the
terrible this
love
person
that part.
Is. You're
for the Russians.
Yeah. But you're questioning, like, oh, I want the Russian mobster to defeat our protagonist because she's so terrible. I think that's really compelling when they can craft a character like
that. But it's not just about crafting a character. It's also about casting the actor in that role because...
Yeah. And she is stellar.
But she's great, but part of the reason you root for the Russian mob is because you like Peter Dinklage, right? Like, part of the reason you root for Tony Soprano is because you like James Gandolfini. Yeah. You like Bryan Cranston, right? Like, you like there's something underneath it all that is still likable, because if they were just awful, like, you couldn't watch a show like that. There has to be something in there that draws you in from a personality standpoint. And so, like, you're willing to be like, well, I normally wouldn't root for the Russian mob, but this lady's pretty awful, so...
But look, it's Peter Dinklage.
Yeah, and I like Peter Dinklage, so, you know.
So, Joe, let's talk about what she's doing in general, this character.
Yes. So what she is kind of like a guardian ad litem. What she does is she finds elderly folks who can no longer... Well... who she can convince the court that they can no longer take care of themselves. And then she will, when she becomes their guardian, what she does is she basically sells all their stuff.
And then she can receive a payment for her duties.
Correct.
And so she basically siphons off all the stuff and then she puts them in nursing homes that she has deals where she gets a kickback from them. And so she's basically siphoning off their estate. And And so this is the scary part of a conservatorship, which is, you know, it's in the news because of Britney Spears, right? But it's normally...
Right.
Look at Stan Lee.
Yeah.
Talking to our comic book crowd. Look at the people that were taking care of, quote unquote, Stan Lee. I know we're using a lot of quotes, but it's like that guy towards the end of his life, the people...
He should not have been doing shows.
But they were, but the handlers,
they were just wheeling him out
there.
Wheeling
him out there so that they could take a percentage, and they were managing his finances, which were payments to themselves and all
that.
You know, so
and you see that a lot with celebrities at the end. B.B. King should not have been torn for the last 3 or 4 years of his life. I mean, I saw some of those shows.
Wrestlers are the same way.
Who was? Yeah, wrestlers.
They do that to like old school wrestlers. They'll just wheel them out to
Groucho
shows.
Groucho Marx, that's a very famous story about the last 5 years of Groucho Marx's life. So I mean, it happens.
And what this film does is on top of the whole conflict with the two main characters that we're talking about, it shows how our healthcare system is failing a lot of people, especially the elderly, and also how they are treated like numbers. These elderly folks are treated as assets on a spreadsheet.
Right.
And Marla Grayson is just looking at, oh, you know, I had this person and he expired after 5 months, you know, putting him in terms as harsh as that. It's like, oh, I thought he was going to last us at least a few years.
Like, she's mad.
Oh, yeah, the first guy. He was there for, like, 6 months.
Like, he dies so early into his run that, like, the family ends up inheriting money. Like, she's, like, her goal is to, like, make sure this guy siphoned off all the money.
She's supposed to outlast the family.
Yeah. So if you think about it, it's like you have a human being, in the movie, a character, a human being has died, and her first thought is, he only lasted me 5 months. So that's how harsh and cold she is, and it shows how there are people out there who really do treat other human beings as numbers. Look at the whole situation we're dealing with now, and this is not political. This is a human being issue. 500,000 people dead in the United States from this pandemic. And you have people out there, oh, they were old. Oh, they had other issues.
They had diabetes too, so who cares?
Yeah. It's like because someone is sick or old or has other issues does not make them any less of a human being or a person that has family and a life. And so I think this movie, again, it touches on so many things that I think it's making a great statement and is eye-opening for a lot of people, because what she's doing is what a lot of human beings are doing out there in the world and why we're in such a terrible situation, part of the reason why.
Yeah. So what happens is she is working these old folks, she's working these cases, and then Alicia Witt plays a doctor, and she says, I think we got one. I think we have like a cherry.
Yeah, they call it a cherry.
Which is funny because I watched this right after I watched the movie Cherry. And so I'm like, how often do people make a point out of cherry in a movie?
Cherry?
And then there's a whole movie, and then this, I don't know, I just thought that was funny.
So, and what a cherry is this person who has a vast amount of wealth
and no family.
Is no family, but and is old enough that we can maybe work this to our
and no family to step in to protect them.
Exactly.
Correct.
No attachments. Yeah. No one that can
fight her on this. So Marla does her thing. They get her to court.
Oh man, I'll give you all this info except for the medical records. That would be unethical.
Yeah.
That would be unethical.
Like, that's a nice little wink and nod to loopholes and skirting around the legal system of, you know, I did all this, which is totally illegal and horrible and unethical, but it's like, oh, but HIPAA, I can't give you these medical records.
But you know that she did.
No, right? Like, I don't know that she did, but I don't know that she needed to, is the point.
She told her enough stuff
yes.
that she she basically gave her the medical information without giving her the medical information. Yeah.
But it shows you how people in control and in power can skirt the law and do everything but the illegal part
and get away with it.
And another commentary.
It might not be illegal, but it's immoral.
Yes.
Yes.
And should be illegal.
Yeah.
It should very much be illegal. So Marla and her... it's funny, as I'm watching this, I was like, this woman should be Renee Montoya.
I know, it's the good
thing. When that Gotham Central show starts, they cast this woman immediately as
Renee
Montoya.
She's awesome. Isaac,
she's great.
Isaac Gonzalez is the actor, and she is very charismatic. She's in Baby Driver. I think she's the female heist member.
Yeah. Okay. I don't watch the movie anymore because Kevin Spacey is a scumbag.
Yeah, but so she's the main robber, the woman that's on their team, and she's really charismatic. I think she's really good in this role with the dramatic stuff. I thought she was great.
Yeah, she has a great scene, and we'll get to when she yells at Rosamund Pike for a reason. So they go to this woman's house, and they basically pull her out of the house, and they've got the cops there, and they're making it is not a good scene. And then they get this woman into like a I say nice, like room in a retirement home.
It is
home.
Nice. That guy.
No, they.
It
they,
is
they,
nice. I totally get that it's nice, but it's also just like she has no business.
No, she's got no business. But that's the thing, though. Like it is. It's really nice because they want to take as much money from her as possible. So like they put her in a very expensive, lavish nursing. That nursing home looked almost identical to the nursing home that my grandmother was in, and it was that place we my
and look at all the money that you siphoned
off totally that's how I paid for this podcast. I but like my sister and I used to joke about the fact that it was like, I mean, the nursing home was like a cruise ship but wasn't a cruise ship. Like they there was like an ice cream thing where you could just go get ice cream whenever you wanted, and there was a, you know, a pool and a bowling alley, and I mean it was beautiful.
It's cool. We've seen, we have a lot of those that are popping up around this area, and they're very high end. Yeah. And it's nice that if people are, you know, trapped, so to speak, in a place, at least they can have a theater room and go to the kitchen, and they go and get these amazing, like, 5-star looking meals from the chef downs. You know, it's cool that they make it a nicer situation than feeling like you're like in a motel room or something, you know?
Yeah.
But this guy, Damian Young, the actor, always
so
plays
good.
Like smarmy.
Always like a smarmy scumbag.
He's so good at it. And, you know,
it's funny. Like, when I see him, I know he's played smarmy scumbags. I don't see it. I see he was the love interest on Mindy, Mindy Kaling show. Yeah.
Oh, really?
And so, like, that's who I always see. Like,
No, we're not talking about the lawyer.
Oh, I thought we were talking about the lawyer.
No, the nursing home
guy.
No,
the nursing home guy.
Sam Robinson.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, sorry. I know what you're talking about. And it's Chris Messina, and he's amazing.
He's great.
But no, Damian Young is this smarmy guy, and you can tell that Marla works with him because, you know, he says that, oh, this guy that only lasted 5 months, now he's dead. But good news, his room's available.
Yeah.
And he says it's $2,000 a week to hold the room for her. She says, oh, it was $500 before. And he's like, oh, if you don't pay it,
someone
will.
Yeah, but you're not the only one on the list.
And it's like all these people that are supposed to be caring for human beings are treating them as assets, and they're out for making money. And I think that that's another very apt commentary on the state of medicine and healthcare, and, you know, just
it can be hard to get someone into a nice nursing home like that.
Oh,
like we had to really hustle to get. Mm-hmm. And when my mother,
the wait list is
and
ridiculous.
When my mother was needing a nursing home because my grandmother was in independent living, but my mother was like sick and on the decline and in and out of comas and stuff, and like we were trying to find one that wasn't awful, and like you really had to hustle to find one where they would treat them well. Like, I mean, it was not easy.
Yep. So they move her in.
Yeah. And then there's another scene where Frankie is at the house, and they've already repainted it. They've gutted the house. Everything's gone.
I think the score and the soundtrack in this movie is so good.
It's got
good.
A cool, like, synth 80s
it
score.
It does. It's very...
That's dope. I like it a lot.
It's very cool. When I was watching the movie again, I'm like, this soundtrack is just awesome. But they go through that montage of them selling all the stuff, but then someone comes to check on and pick up.
This taxi cab pulls up, and this kid comes to the front door, and Frankie opens the door, and she's... is it Franny or Frankie?
It's Fran. But she used to be Frankie.
The cop calls her Frankie.
To her one love interest, she was Frankie, which
is
another little wink at like.
I do like, you used to like to be called that. So he shows up and she's like, that person doesn't live here anymore. And he was like, what? All right. Doesn't say a word, turns around, walks out. And of course, her cop instincts kind of kick in. She's like, hey. Like, who are you? And he's like, bye, and drives away.
This character of Fran, we should say, is very cool.
Yeah.
She's super.
Like, I'm telling you, like, she is the spitting, like, this entire movie, she's the spitting image of Renee Montoya.
I had the exact same thought.
Yeah, and she has these cop skills, but in this movie, she's more of a private investigator. She takes the photographs of people. She finds out all their information and talks to people and gets documents and things. So
has all the connections.
Yeah, she's
she
a really
right
cool, I mean, really well-written character. I like her a lot, and she would be perfect in that role. But basically, she's like, who called you to you know, who called this cab?
He's just like,
he's
oh,
like,
okay,
yep,
bye.
And,
like, and runs
so
away.
I think we should just say right here and set it up. So they thought they had a cherry. But the reason her whole history is scrubbed and she has no connections is her son is the head of this Russian mafia.
Yes, her son, Peter Dinklage, is the leader of the Russian mob
and
in America
at this
point.
She has a fake identity. She has stolen
the woman, Jennifer. Jennifer, whatever.
Jennifer Peterson.
Frankie ends up finding out that Jennifer Peterson died in like 1935 or something, and they used this identity for this woman. But we don't learn any of that until Marla comes face to face in what I think is one of is the best scene.
Oh, I
in
would
the
disagree.
Movie.
The best scene is her and the lawyer.
I love
that's
that.
What I mean.
I love.
Oh, that's what I mean. Thought, her and the lawyer in the office.
Okay, I thought you meant the scene between her and Peter Dinklage at the end where she lays out.
No,
everything.
No,
okay.
Marla.
Oh my
and
God,
the
that
lawyer
scene
in the
is
office
so amazing.
Is
he
electric?
That is the best written scene in the movie.
Yeah.
It's incredible performances, but that whole thing of intimidating and saying things without saying it,
yeah.
because
what, so
what he's
brilliant.
Doing is the same thing that the doctor's doing,
yeah.
see? So you see this from all different angles. The doctor says, here's all this information, health declining, I can say this and that, but I can't give you the medical records.
Right.
Well, Chris Messina comes in as a lawyer, always in awesome suits, and he just is such...
that I gotta tell you, that suit in the courtroom, I was like...
Oh, you look like you walked right out of a Dick Tracy movie.
Right. It was a reverse pinstripe suit. I've never seen that in my life.
It's so cool with this character. He just, I don't know, he's just this really well-dressed, smarmy,
totally.
Lawyer. But he says in not so many words, either you're going to release Jennifer Peterson from your care or we're going to kill you. And
the line that I think is brilliant is where she's like, are you threatening me? And he's like, no, that would be ridiculous. I'm just saying some people die sooner than others.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the whole thing, the exchange is written amazingly. So
oh, it's so good. It was so good.
But the point is, they picked the wrong person. It's Peter Dinklage. So the taxi cab guy has to go tell his boss that he couldn't pick up the mother. And when he's like, why and who has her and all this, he has no answers, which does not make Peter Dinklage very happy. And so they have to now figure out where she is. And you know,
one of the things that I love about this movie is... okay, Peter Dinklage is a smaller person. And the fact that they are able to write these scenes and all of these actors are able to show you that they are terrified.
It never comes up.
It's not played for laughs.
It never comes up.
Like, I
love
not
played for laughs. They just, if this guy was Tony Soprano, it's the same reaction, but the fact that it's Peter Dinklage makes him even scarier.
But it's the same, and that's where I think Jay Blakeson really has a knack for introducing these characters from all walks of life, because not only is it never played for laughs, it's never addressed.
Yeah,
Never talked about.
Peter Dinklage is a character, and the way that John David Washington is the protagonist of Tenet, and it's never like, oh, he's a black guy. It's like, no, he's just the lead of this movie.
Yeah.
He's just a guy, right? It's Peter Dinklage is a mob boss. He's not a short mob boss. He's an actor. He's a person. I think this movie treats, the characters like the world around us. There's all sorts of different people from different ways of life, looks, shape, sizes, whatever, beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like that there's people in this movie
totally,
reflecting the real world, and it's not like a thing. It's just, it is what it is, right?
Right. So now it comes down to it's Marla versus Peter Dinklage. Like, this is where we are. Peter Dinklage is trying to gather as much information as he can. Chris Messina ends up taking Marla back to court. Wearing, like I said, a reverse pinstripe suit. That's exactly what that thing is. I've never seen anything like it in my life. It's bonkers. And he thinks he's got her dead to rights in this court hearing. And every time he's got an affidavit from a woman stating that Marla and Alicia Witt, the doctor, conspired. Marla comes right back. She's like, she fired that woman. She hates that woman.
Marla is always one step ahead, and no matter what evidence these people have, because she has found so many loopholes and she's made her entire business on finding these, at the end of the day, the judge, Isaiah Whitlock Jr., who's great as always, he's like, are you her lawyer? And he's like, well, if I could get into a room with her for 5 seconds, I'm sure she'll sign a retainer for me. And he's like, so you have no proof you are her lawyer. He's just a guy.
Yeah, he's like, I represent concerned parties. Who are those? I can't
and then
tell
he's
you.
Like, well, he's like, until well, you can prove that you're her lawyer, you can't be here arguing on her behalf. You're not her lawyer. So Marla's so smart. She's such an intelligent and ruthless person. Like, she's not doing good things, but she is very good at what she does.
Yes. So Marla's at the gym and she sees her. Well, we should say that Alicia Witt is closing up this doctor's office. And there's this person sitting in the waiting room, and that's the last we see of Alicia Witt. Marla's doing some workout stuff on a not Peloton machine.
that's how you know she's not a good person.
She's a bad guy.
I was wondering,
why does she have a Peloton?
Peloton was the first thing that came to mind when I saw that scene. Could you tell if it was like a Soul Cycle or like
it was like a rowing machine, wasn't it?
No,
she's on a bike.
Yeah.
No.
There's a time when she's on a different machine, but she's on a bike.
The first one you see when she's sweating in the red light is a bike.
I promise you. She's in a spin class.
Oh, no, that's true. I'm talking about the scene where she sees the report of Alicia Witt.
No. There's two scenes when they show the bike.
You're right.
So you couldn't tell what it was that time?
It looked like it was supposed to be a Soul Cycle class.
Okay.
To me. I don't
know. That's what I was thinking.
I don't know if it was.
Tom gave this movie half a star review just because of that.
I don't know if it was officially a Soul Cycle class, but that's what it looked like it was supposed to be.
She sees a report that Alicia Witt has been murdered. At this point, she goes and gets Frankie. And this is another great, probably the second best scene of the movie, is this interaction between her, Marla, and Frankie, where Marla's like, we're going to be okay. We're doing this. And Frankie's like, pack a fucking bag and let's go. And Marla snaps. Like, there's a moment where she's like, oh, this is serious. Like, you're serious. If you're freaking out, like, I need to be freaking out because this is bad.
The title, I Care a Lot, is great because she's a caretaker, but she doesn't really care.
Right.
She says she cares about people in her life. She doesn't. She cares about herself. She cares about money. If she cared about these people that were getting hurt around her, if she cared about Frankie, she would get the hell out of there. But no, she doubles down and she wants to win. And so both these characters, Marla and the Peter Dinklage character, are people that don't want to lose.
Right.
And so what do you get when you get two people that don't lose fighting one another is you just get death and loot and chaos. And so at the end of the day, she doesn't care. She cares about herself a lot. And that's it.
Yeah. Right. And the money.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think. Is this where Peter Dinklage tries to break out his mom? That's right.
Well, that does happen. We should say Diane Wiest is amazing in this movie.
She's wonderful.
She says a lot without saying really anything. There's several confrontations with Marla and her that are like really good because she's just quiet and contemplative.
Won't give Marla any information.
Yeah. And Marla is like, who are you? And she won't. But then she has this really almost like a horror-esque scene where she's basically like, they're coming for you.
He's coming for you.
And it's terrifying because you don't know who she is, but you know that she's in trouble from talking to the lawyer and people are dying around her. And I think it's so perfect that you get this horrible person that picked the wrong fight with the Russian mob and gets her comeuppance. I love it.
So Peter Dinklage tries to organize a way for his mobster buddies to break out his mom. And Marla just happens to be there, like figures it out. They figure out who this guy is. They figure out who the guy in the cab was. And it turns out that his name was Alexei.
She doesn't happen to be here. They get a call.
That's right. And the Frankie finds out that this guy used to be part of the Russian mob. And so they start putting things together. They end up going back to the old folks' home. And during this process, which is another very well done action sequence, like a shootout in this tiny little hallway, which I always appreciate because that's never easy to film. As they're leaving, Alexei and is leaving with Jennifer. Marla just happens to be there and smashes him in the stomach.
She gets a call and they say that Jennifer Peterson's under lock and key. And when they're trying to bring out Jennifer Peterson, she gets a call and her and Frankie show up to stop them.
Right. And then they end up escorting. Of course, Peter Dinklage is there, but since he's the head of the Russian mob, he's never seen in public.
So he's in a car right outside the home. Right. And she almost walks to him and they pull her away.
Pull her away and send
in
her
one
back.
Of those heartbreaking, frustrating scenes.
Right, where she's right there.
So they send. So basically, the mob eventually hit her where it hurts, and that's Fran. They attack Fran, almost kill her.
Leave her in the house to die. Turn on the gas. Yeah. They think, you know.
Yeah, meanwhile, they also attack Marla. They eventually capture her, and they make it look like in a drunk driving accident. They pump vodka into her, leave her with a bottle.
Is that what that was? Yeah, they're putting in her nose.
Yeah,
so she'd be drunk, legally drunk.
But they crash her into the water. She is able to wake up and snap out of it somehow. Breaks out
in a great scene where she walks into the gas station and she's
soaking
just,
wet.
Yeah,
soaking there's wet. A lot of really good scenes in this movie. Yeah. But they basically what it comes down to is that. She's still always one step ahead, even though the mob has orchestrated all these attacks. She's a very smart person, and she ends up finding Peter Dinklage. Mm-hmm. She takes out his driver. She poses as a driver, and she knocks him out, and she leaves him like on
life support, like a random sub road. And again, even though she's a terrible person, you got to give her credit, especially when it comes to these two terrible people. It's like she does to him exactly what she does to all her other people and shows that he messed with the wrong person. He wakes up in the hospital and she, because he's a John Doe, has been granted conservatorship of him. And she basically ends up saying, I want $10 million from you and this will all go away. He eventually says, okay, I agree, but I've got a better idea. I like your style. Let's partner up. And so they end up creating instead of.
Well, there's a moment where you're just like, well, this can either. OK, we can either root for Marla and she doesn't. She takes the money and runs, or she becomes an even worse person.
Right. And so she
builds this massive, you know.
Yeah. So she builds a caretaker empire. And so not only in this city, but now all over the U.S., probably all over the world.
Guardianship or something.
Yeah. They build this huge corporation. And so now her and the Russian mob are in cahoots doing what she does on a large scale. And so the end of the movie is she's on a talk show and they're like, how did you do it? And she has this whole talk. It goes back to what she says in the beginning. There's lions and lambs. Which one are you going to be? And she says, I'm a lioness, which I'm sure will anger more people because she put a female spin on it. And he's like, how did you do all this? And what type of person do you want to be? And yeah, she says, I'm a lioness. I'll always protect the people that care to me, which she doesn't. Yeah. So it just shows how clueless she is in that regard. But she leaves her interview. She's walking to the car, Fran smiling. They're rich. They're happy.
So here's what I will say. Is I have watched enough wrestling to know when somebody is wearing all white, something is going to happen.
Well, right. But here's the deal. At this point,
if Ric Flair walks out in a white shirt and a white jacket, there's going to get the blood.
Highlight the blood
all over that jacket. Yep.
But at this point in the movie, I could understand if it ended like this, you would be very angry. What's the point of this movie? What are they trying to say? But this is where I think the movie is, again, brilliant. And I love it so much because of this perfect ending. It looks like she's got it all together.
She's married. Her and Frankie looks like they got married.
They're
at least
all
engaged.
Rich and famous and happy. Yeah. And then who comes back? The guy from the very beginning.
Shoots her in the chest.
His mom, who she wouldn't let him see and stole her money and everything, died in the nursing home without seeing her son.
Yeah, because Marla refused to let the son go see his mother.
Yeah. So he kills her. He murders her.
And of course, it's beautiful, but like she is wearing like a white blouse with like a white sports coat. Yeah. Her hair is slicked back. And then as soon as the bullet goes through, there's blood everywhere and it's turning the suit pink. And it's like, yeah, I knew that was coming, but
I mean,
still.
But that's the perfect ending. She got what she deserved.
Yeah, she got exactly what she deserved.
She ruined many lives. And yeah, if she got away with it, the movie would be horrible. And I'm not saying the good guy always has to win, but with everything we've seen, what would the point of
the
movie be?
Although it's still not a happy ending because she's unleashed this on the world. You see them training hundreds of people.
It's already too late.
And how to do this. So like she's unleashed this, you know, this scam on the world.
No,
right?
but she's still the brains of the operation.
Oh, I mean, it was great to see her get shot, but it's still not a happy ending in that. This doesn't end it. Like, she's already, like, released this virus into the world.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't have to have a happy ending. It's just this movie was about her, and she's a terrible person, and she got what she deserved in the end, and it's so fitting to her. I'm so happy because a lot of the complaints, again, were, what a stupid ending. I hated the ending, or I liked the movie. What a terrible ending. And it's like, what other ending do you want for this despicable
character? There's no redeeming qualities for her ever. No.
She's beyond redemption.
Yeah, she's beyond redemption. So it's just like, what are you? Okay, that's a dumb.
I loved it. That scene, the way that they edited it, you know, kudos to the editing with the interview and her walking happy and the score and everything, and then just like Fran having to watch her get murdered in front of her. It's like
watching her die. Like you watch her die on screen.
Because so she screwed over the wrong people. She screwed over the Russian mob and got into all this trouble. Still made it out because she's that good and smart. But it's still another person she screwed over.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And she screwed over the wrong person.
Yeah, this is a brilliant flick. Like that was I was super impressed.
Yeah, I liked this movie a lot. Like once I made my peace with the fact that there was no one to root for, then it was like it was a fun ride. Yeah,
definitely.
There awesome. Well, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online, Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group.
And of course, don't forget our Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content and you help us out. And that's greatly appreciated. So that's it for this one. Coming up next time, I guess we will tackle Raya and the Last Dragon. Did I get that right?
Oh, all right.
So anyway, that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Joe lies when he cries.
Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.